Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of At the Movies with William Fletcher. As per usual, I am your host, William Fletcher, and this week I am joined by a new guest who's never done the show before, Mr. Hagen Seer.
I don't know what to say, so...
And this week we're going to be looking at a film that Hagen chose to cover for the show. All That Jazz was the choice of film you chose for this week. This week we're going to be talking about All That Jazz, which you were very keen on covering. Is there any particular reason why this film?
Well, I hadn't seen it in a very long time, so I really wanted to rewatch it, and I saw that you hadn't seen it, so I just thought it was a good opportunity to.
I didn't dislike. I would say that I enjoyed watching the film, but I do not have much in the sense of I don't really see myself revisiting it that often. Mm-hmm. Not bad. It's not like a film I'd go to if I was like, I want to rewatch a film today. This isn't one of
I get it. It's pretty heavy. It's pretty heavy. Even though, like, the presentation of the film is quite glamorous, you know, the subject matter is pretty dark. I feel like half of the enjoyment comes with knowing Bob Fosse's life in general, and then seeing how this pieces in together. Because, he had a really short film career. Started mostly on Broadway with musicals like Sweet Charity and Chicago, and I guess Cabaret as well. And then slowly he started making films, first with like box office flop, Sweet Charity. It's an adaptation of the musical that he opened on Broadway. And then afterwards he moved on to Cabaret, which was an award-winning film. It won 8 Academy Awards at the Oscars that year. And then after he moved and he did, he made Lenny, which is a biography of Lenny Bruce, this comedian, I guess, known for risque topics and just kind of being a bit of a jackass, I guess. While he was filming and preparing, like editing Lenny and choreographing Chicago on Broadway, he suffered quite a big heart attack and then went under open heart surgery. And then after he was really interested with the idea of death after, you know, coming so close to it, that he set out to make a film. At first he wrote this film adaptation of the book Ending by Hilmar Wurlitzer with his friend who ended up producing All That Jazz. He realized that it was quite dour, and so since he was known for making musicals, he decided to use what he felt was his strong suit of song and dance and turning All That Jazz into this really metaphysical, meta-reality kind of look and take on his own life. I think that's why I really love it. I think I love it because it's so completely aware of his foibles and his weaknesses. Like, you know, he says in, like, Joe Gideon says in the film that he is addicted to women, or like he loves women all the time, even though he has a girlfriend, and then he's constantly flirting with the cast members of the musical. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's a drug addict. He takes like a bunch of pills in the morning every day and then listens to Vivaldi while saying it's showtime. You know, it's like a really, I mean, I guess Bob Fosse is kind of mocking himself in that way. He's saying that you know, he's a complete asshole, and he's aware of that. He's aware of the fact that he's a complete asshole, but he just can't help it. You know, that's his character, or that's his personality. There's just some basic context. I think helps enhance the film in a way, because you really see how, you know, how Joe Gideon is a complete, I don't know how to say it. I guess his genius, but he's also completely neurotic and an asshole in many ways, you know, abusing his cast members, talking, like, constantly bossing around the women in his life, you know, with the girlfriend. But, okay, maybe what about some of your thoughts, since I've been talking for quite a while?
I think that the film, and it's not that the idea of rewatching, like, it's not like, yeah, it's a very heavy subject matter what the film's dealing with, but that's not really why I don't see myself wanting to rewatch it. It's more of a, I find a lot of the film to be very, uninteresting isn't the word, I would say it's a lot of it's very meandering, and that's not inherently a problem, but I think, for me, if a film is going to be sort of meandering and sort of just sort of be more of a series of events, and I need to be a bit more engaged with it. And I think that, like, I think the last sort of half hour of the film I really liked, but it's the first 90 minutes that I didn't find, uninteresting isn't the word, but it very much to me felt that I was less engaged with what was happening for like the first 90 minutes, and then it's sort of towards the end of the film where he's like about to die, basically. That's when I found it the most interesting.
Well, how about the acting?
It's a very good. I haven't seen Roy Scheider in a whole lot. I've seen him in like a couple things, you know, Jaws and that, but I've not really seen him in a whole lot. But I think that he's pretty good. He gives a good performance in the film, and I think he does sort of carry a lot of the sort of less engaging scenes for me. He really does a lot to help me, because I think the film, there's like lots of individual scenes that I like, but they don't quite come together for me as much as I sort of wish they did. And not to say that they don't, they're not relevant to the film per se, but, or that they're like disconnected from each other. It's just there's sort of a lot of scenes that are great just sort of by themselves. It feels a lot more like there's the setup for it, something really great. I think this entire film, there's the setup for something really, really great, and it doesn't really quite come together by the end of it. What in the sense, like the last 30 minutes, I think are great, but it's everything beforehand, whereas like everything leading up to this sort of point didn't quite land for me.
The messiness of it is very evident, and most people probably find this a flaw. Like, I think I have quite a few people on Letterboxd who I follow who just found this like boring or confusing, or you know, not very interesting in as a whole. Like, I mean, in spurts, of course, there are moments like, you know, the last 30 minutes or the maybe the first 5 minutes of the film are quite rapturing, but I feel like I have a need to defend this, since I picked this and I really wanted to discuss this. I mean, I knew this was probably a difficult film, because although it's quite critically acclaimed, I think it suffers from like a lack of context a lot of the time. But I really think that the messiness is more of a positive thing, in the sense that you really see Fosse's real life, real time reaction to the very real possibility of death. Like, the constantly, he's on the brink of death at all times. You see the heart attacks. It's a man confronting himself, really, uncompromisingly. You know, it's a very well composed eulogy of his own life, looking back at it fondly, but also I guess occasionally regretfully, but mainly ruefully, you know. And I think the musical numbers make it all, like, you know, there's like a, there's just such a strange but fantastic contrast of the upbeat numbers, especially, like, for example, if we're going to talk about All That Jazz, we're going to talk about the ending, right? Where first he's at the hospital and he's hallucinating, but then you see the women in his life each do a musical number on, you know, just berating him about how it's, how he's thrown his life away to be a womanizer, just, and just completely, I guess, wasted to decadence, you know? While he's sitting on there, and then afterwards we see him going through these five stages of grief, which comes back from the stand-up routine that the comic does at the start of the film when he's editing the film, which is based on Lenny. After we reach the Bye Bye Life musical number, where he imagines himself in a variety show, you know, as a contestant, I guess, of death. And I don't know, I just found that really touching, because it was the first time I think I really saw a man, or just anybody really, looking like head first into mortality, and acknowledging that they were never perfect. In fact, they were very far from perfect, and they were absolute, like, horrible, like, they were terrible. Like, he was a bad man. Like, in fact, this film, even though a lot of his entire career was, you know, built on the shoulders of women, like his wife, who choreographed a lot of the film, she never really gets acknowledged. I can totally see why many people find that part of the film disingenuous, I guess, because while he is acknowledging that he's a complete asshole, he still doesn't really act upon it to repent or to change his ways. I think to turn this back to why I like All That Jazz, I think it's just this really kinetic frenzy of a film that just meets truth at where it is, acknowledging all of life. I guess, I don't know, it's quite hard to articulate why I really love this film when I don't have it written down anywhere, but it was really terrific. I think if you watch the film not knowing Fosse's life and you don't enjoy it, I don't blame you, because it's quite personal. I don't think we ever really see musicals anymore, and that news, the news of studios hiding the fact that stuff like certain films are musicals, like Wonka, you know, it's really heartbreaking when you see how beautiful musicals were back then.
The Hollywood musical is not a thing really anymore, and certainly not to the degree that it was. I think this is a film that I think I don't think I've said it on recording before, but there is something about films made in the 70s where there's a real way about the way they're made and the way they look that you can't recreate like nowadays. I think that's like, there just isn't a way. Like, I watched a film towards the end of last year called Straw Dogs, which is an incredible film, and it's a film that they did a remake of like 2011 or something, and it's not very good from what I've heard. But and I think you couldn't remake that film, because so much of that, of Straw Dogs, is it's made in the 70s, and it's there's a real grittiness, and there's a way that it's shot and the way that it looks that you can only have in the 70s. And I think All That Jazz has a certain sort of look and feel that I don't know if you could necessarily recreate again. So, like, nowadays, I think it sort of would have to be, I don't know if I would say, like, you couldn't make this film nowadays, but it wouldn't be the same kind of film.
I think, actually, you know, the 70s were really an interesting decade, especially after the moving of So if you look through the history of Hollywood, like really the peak of musicals were like in the 50s and 60s when they were constantly dominating the Academy Awards, like Sound of Music, West Side Story, and American in Paris, you know, films like that. And then, so I find Fosse a really interesting point, like an interesting point in cinematic history, because he kind of melds both the past influences of the musicals of the 50s and 60s while combining it with the gritty, more, I guess, more truthful representations of life found in 70 films, like brought about by the new Hollywood filmmakers like Scorsese and Coppola, you know, and the likes. I think he does this. This is also kind of why I find Fosse so fascinating, is because he does a musical. I mean, if you've seen Cabaret, you know, it's a complete, it's a musical set at the heights of Nazi Germany, but it's quite glamorous at the same time. It you know, it glamorizes a lot of the dark, not dark, I guess the underground side of Berlin, while contrasting it with the brutal realities of Nazi Germany at the time. And I think this contrast is something that Fosse does a lot in his career, really playing around with, you know, fiction and reality, and in All That Jazz's case, you know, glamour with the complete opposite, like death. Especially, I think the ending is the apotheosis of the entire film, with a glamorous, glitzy, show-stopping number. But the lyrics of the musical number, which is based on an actual song, "Bye Bye Love," but "Bye Bye Life." You know, the lyrics are actually quite sad when you read into it. You just see him saying that he's saying goodbye to happiness, goodbye loneliness, because he thinks he's gonna die. And you know, this I guess it's irony, dramatic irony, is it's quite hard to explain, but I think that's why I find the film so fascinating as well. Like, part of the reason why I find the film so fascinating is because Fosse plays with this, the ironies that come with life. Like, you know, he knows exactly what he is in All That Jazz, which is a womanizer, a drug user, but yeah, really talented, hardworking man. But he's unable to fix his own self, you know? He never does fix himself. And in the end, he does die 6 years later from a heart attack, right before he opens his show. I'd have to look this up, but he was going to open a Broadway show, and then he died on the opening night from a heart attack. So I think, yeah, no, I guess I've seen people compare All That Jazz to BoJack Horseman, which, although I haven't seen the show, I think maybe you could comment on that if you have seen it. I assume you have, but if you haven't, oh well.
Some of it. I mean, BoJack Horseman is, yeah, about sort of this self-destructive guy. I think it is kind of, it does sort of have similar sort of, yeah, themes and ideas at play with it. Like, it's about this horseman, and he's I can kind of understand sort of that comparison to a degree. I haven't seen all of BoJack, but I do understand that the comparison makes sense, and it is fitting. And I do think that Roy Scheider's character is a very interesting one to look at and to analyze, because I think there's a lot about his character you can take from him. I think there's a lot of discussions and stuff to talk about in regards to this film and the characters with. Oh, I think there's a lot to say about it, and I think that as a film, yeah, it's I like there's the discussions that can be had about the film that I enjoy, but there's the it's just the way that it all comes together that doesn't like completely land for me, which is more of the of no, I don't know if a problem is necessarily the word, but I like the ideas and what this film is tackling and what and discussions that can be had about it, but I don't necessarily love the way it all comes together fully.
Well, how did you what did you think about the Angel of Death? Well, the character that Jessica Lange plays that constantly confronts him with his in his own life.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting. Well, I think that the film sort of as a whole, I think that all the sort of scenes where he's sort of like hallucinating and he's having all these sorts of I think that stuff I think is very interesting. And I think, yeah, just sort of the way that it's that stuff I really enjoyed. And I think there was, I think sort of, this sort of thematic, like sort of elements behind it, I really enjoyed. And I did think sort of like that final moment where he's sort of going towards the Angel of Death and then it just like cuts to him being zipped up in a body bag. I thought like that was a very effective moment to end the film on. I think that's a very powerful thing to, conclude the film with.
Yeah, it's probably one of my favorite endings of all time, I think, because once again, I think I'm just repeating myself at this point. The irony, you know, like the contrast between him having the time of his life with that musical number that he kind of fantasizes about with the more brusque reality of him just being zipped up in a bag, you know. And I'm surprised that he managed to predict that he would die before the opening of his show. I mean, he didn't intentionally do it, but he did actually end up dying before he opened. I looked it up. It was Sweet Charity, the revival of Sweet Charity on Broadway.
I find that, and the sort of idea of it's just like because the film really, for the most part, is just this look at this incredibly self-destructive guy and how he sort of loses himself and he loses everything, you know, and he, you know, he's, you know, they're telling him like you're gonna, you know, sort of towards the second half of the film, they're telling him like you're gonna die if you don't stop doing this, and then he just keeps doing it, and he's very just self-destructive.
He's aware that he's you know, a terrible person, but it's very hard for someone to move on or to know how to improve themselves. And you know, self-improvement is really difficult, I think. Especially when you are so entrenched and you are constantly venerated and celebrated for your work. And the only way that you've known how to work is through these self-destructive techniques, you know? Like, I can only produce great work if I'm constantly on the brink of death.
You know, and also, you know, being an addict is also a very, you know, difficult thing to not, you know, to like, to you know, I've never struggled with addiction. Thankfully, but I know that the people who do, it's very hard to, you know, to stop and to stop being an addict and to be able to, you know, because sort of once you get in a pattern and being, you know, a drug addict or drinking or whatever, a sex addict or whatever, it's very hard to stop that. And I think it shows a really I think hit the central character I think of Joe Gideon I think is a very fascinating character. It's more just a lot of what the film around him is that I was not nearly as interested in. I think and again I like what the idea of the film and what it's doing. It's just the way that it and I understand, like, why this is all there, why all these different scenes are there, and I understand, like, if you got rid of those scenes, it would change the film and what the film's trying to do, and I understand that, but I think it sort of doesn't nearly connect with me.
There are a lot of films like that where, like, I understand what the film is trying to go for, but it doesn't always land. I think this is just something that, for me, really hit home. You know, just the idea that you can self-reflexively look at your own life and confront your foibles, your weaknesses, your downfalls, your pitfalls,
mm-hmm.
was just, yeah, like, completely reflexively, was, you know, just, I don't know, I feel like that is very personal, and I think it really depends on how anybody react, like, you know, how everybody reacts to a certain film is shaped by their own personal context, and I feel like maybe the stuff that I've felt in my own life feels very similar to the way Fosse views his own life, you know, understanding that we all have our own struggles and our own insecurities, right? But we are not always able to change. But yeah, I totally get it. Like, it's quite a dense film, and sometimes sometimes it's not always very cohesive or cogent on what it's trying to say. You know, like, there are some moments where the editing, which is really, I guess, kinetic or really frenetic, doesn't always communicate the points clearly. I'm very fond of films that have very ambitious premises, even if they don't always pull it off. I think the ambition is what I'm always looking for in a film. I think a film that just aims to do something that's quite easy to accomplish and does it doesn't always hit it for me, even if it's accomplished very well. You know, I think ambition in art is quite sorely missed nowadays, possibly because maybe I'm not watching the right people. I don't know, but I don't know. There are some works which I've just seen and they don't necessarily impress me recently. I mean, of course there are always talented filmmakers who are always pushing for something ambitious, but I think this sense of ambition, like someone like Fosse probably wouldn't happen today, probably also because they would get slandered for their, you know, abusive actions in, like, the Me Too era, I guess. But I'm not saying that you need to be abusive or a terrible person to make good art, but I think the film is trying to claim that sometimes good artists are terrible people, and they're not trying to condone these actions, but they're just trying to meet it head on and say that, you know, I guess people do make people, not everybody is perfect. In fact, like, people you see online who present a picture perfect life may have their own struggles underneath, right? And as it pertains to him, he's a complete asshole, self-destructive person. But it might not be so extreme, but I think that's possibly how I relate it to my own life, is that we all have our own struggles, but sometimes you can't always tell from the surface.
This was, you know, a big Oscars film. Yeah, I got like 8 Oscar nominations or something. Like, it got a very high number. Let me just look here.
I'm not actually 9. Sure how many it got. Like, a 9.
I've just realized it got 9 Oscar nominations. And I don't know, is it, like, do you think if this film, would this film do as well if it was released now, or?
I think in the tech categories it probably would. Probably not anything above the line.
Above,
I think it's just not really. It's not. Yeah, it's not exactly a film that would get above the line nominations nowadays. Because I think. Maybe in this current film landscape, I think films like people, general audiences, really aren't looking for films like All That Jazz anymore. You know, something that is reflexive, but I guess meta is not quite right, since Everything Everywhere All At Once did get several Oscar nominations last year. But, you know, just the general trend of films having a more cohesive point at the end, whereas All That Jazz is not really very cohesive. I think it's quite messy, but to me, that's its strength. But I think, the Oscars pool of like the voting body is also quite different now. So perhaps, perhaps not. I think it's just, it really depends.
Yeah, and the film also won the Palme d'Or, which does actually make a lot of sense, because the Palme d'Or always has struck me as like a... Palme d'Or's not like the most, like, gonna go for the most widespread appealing film necessarily to, you know, award, to give the win to, you know. I think the Palme d'Or is very much like it can sort of go either, like... And yeah, and the thing with the Oscars and the Palme d'Or, they don't really correlate that much in terms of films that win, like, that win or get nominated at Oscars and win Palme d'Or. The Palme d'Or aren't, the most,
Not many films that win Palme d'Or, win the Palme d'Or, get many Oscar nominations. I guess the big ones would be like Pulp Fiction and Parasite. And I guess more recently, like Triangle of Sadness and Anatomy of a Fall. In the past, not really. Which is why I guess All That Jazz is very surprising in this list of the winners, because it's not very... I guess it fits more in the list of the Palme d'Or winners, I think, than winners of Academy Awards, you know. I mean, a lot of the wins are completely deserved. I think every win it got was incredibly deserved. Maybe not production design, I don't know. I'm not too sure. Like, I mean, it has great production design, but there's also, 1979 was really quite a great year. There was like Apocalypse Now, you know, Kramer versus Kramer, Norma Rae. It was quite a great year, so I don't mind having not winning Best Picture or anything like that. Like, I mean, generally, while I do enjoy following the Academy Awards, I don't really see them as a marker of success or of talent, I guess. I just like to follow them. I'm sure you hold a similar perspective, because nobody in their right mind should really use the Academy Awards as anything other than, you know, an interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't base my case based on the Academy Awards. That's what I'm trying to say.
No. The last episode that will have gone out by the time this episode of that was the Oscars episode, looking at this current year's Oscars. And I some of it I was very complimentary of, and some of it I was less so. The Oscars aren't necessarily a particularly high barometer of what is, you know, the best cinema, but I think it does create. Maybe not as much anymore, but I think through a period of time, Oscar-nominated film, I think that sort of had, not to say it had like a massive amount of, it was like the most prestigious sort of phrasing.
Yeah, I think but nowadays, people just find Academy Awards like that nobody has seen before. I think that's like a common critique that people have of the Academy Awards nowadays, is that oh, they always nominate films that nobody has ever seen. But, I mean, it's different, I think it's different, because films like, films that were dominating the box office in the 70s and 80s and 90s, I guess, were actually hits. They were actually hits, and they were actually good films. Whereas, I mean, nowadays, I can't even tell you what was the top 10 in the box office last year besides Barbenheimer. I really couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I think what does well at the box office now is not really Oscar fare. It's more often going to be big blockbusters that do well at the box office. Well, usually, but, you know, I mean, if I was just to look at the highest grossing films of 1979, the highest grossing film of that year was Kramer versus Kramer. Like, that wouldn't happen nowadays. Yeah. That's just, like, interesting that the highest grossing, well, in the United States and Canada, but, you know, still.
Yeah.
It would be, Kramer versus Kramer, and that's just not what, that wouldn't happen nowadays. I think to talk about All That Jazz more as a film, I think it's a very well made film in terms of its the production, the general look, the cinematography, the editing. I think it's all a very well constructed film, and I can appreciate films that are very well constructed as pieces of work. But I'm always like, it's the writing and the plot that appeals more to me, and I need a film to have a plot and characters that I get invested in first. I'm not, because I know some people it depends for different people. Like, some people they can sort of go with a film if it's got a good vibe, or it looks nice, or anything like that. But writing, I would argue, is the most important thing, and it's the writing in All That Jazz. It doesn't work, and I think it. Because I think if the writing was like different, like if it had been written sort of a different way, I think I would probably love this film. I think because I like a lot of what it is doing and a lot of its ideas. It's just that as a overall piece, the writing just isn't quite up to the level that I personally would want it to be. And I can see how the film, if you can go with the writing and the character, like, because I can appreciate what it's doing, and I can like, this is a film that, like, I can appreciate why someone would like it and would say, this is a film that I love, you know what I mean? This is a film that I know Mike Flanagan has on Letterboxd and everything, has proclaimed as one of his favorite films ever. Totally, and I can understand why this would be a film that you would connect with, and could be a film that someone would consider to be like a great film, because there's a lot about it that I think is very interesting. A lot about it is just incredibly interesting, and I think it, because it's like put together very well. It's just writing wise, it doesn't do a lot for me, and I can sort of understand, and I don't know if relate is necessarily the word, but I've definitely been in that position where I'm pushing myself to create things and to do the best I can on something at the detriment of myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I even if I know that, like, I probably shouldn't be doing this, and what I'm doing might not be, like, the healthiest thing for me, I still do it, you know? And I'm aware that that's not a healthy mindset, and I shouldn't do that. But, you know, I can very much understand, and I can understand what is the film's doing, and I... Yeah, and not to this degree, but I know that I get what it's doing, you know.
I guess I get it. The plot meanders a bit too much. It's quite hard to connect to certain characters. I guess I'm just different. I look for different things when I'm watching a film, I guess, which is not to say one way is inherently bad or worse or better or anything like that. It's just, I think, yeah, no, there are different expectations, of course. Which, mm-hmm. I mean, it's totally fine. At least we had a great, fruitful conversation about the film. Even if we disagree on the subjective aspects of the film, you know, I think it's completely fair that we have different perspectives on this.
Yeah, no, I think that it... Because there are films where I have been like, I don't really get what, like, why they love it, like, why people love that film necessarily. But this is one where I can very much understand, like, okay, this is why I get it. It's not my thing, but I understand where the idea can come from that, like, someone would say, this is a film that I really like. And I'd be like, I get it. Like, just because I don't, like, but I can understand, yeah, the, yeah, I understand why. It's just, yeah, not quite my thing. And it is a bit disappointing, because, like, it can be my thing, but it doesn't quite, and it feels like it's so close to being my kind of film. It just, yeah, doesn't fully connect.
I don't know how to end, like, how to wrap this up. Not liking this. I do really enjoy it. But, you know, I think we're probably meandering a bit. Straying a bit away. I mean, yeah. I like talking. And I don't mind. Mm-hmm. Keep going.
Yeah, is there any sort of scenes or stuff like? But if we're getting close to wrapping up, is there any? Because the only stuff that I really could say like I would pull out as like that is a great stuff is like that final performance he does. I think that is a great scene, and like that's probably the best part of the entire movie for me. Like the whole last 30 minutes are great, but it's like that scene in particular. I really pulled out as like this is a great scene.
Yeah, no, that's probably also my favorite scene. I think, yeah, that, I mean, it's quite hard. I either choose that or the opening where, you know, it constantly cuts between, like, it's very quick cuts between his morning routine and I think that the editing in particular does a really good job of placing you in the position of Joe Gideon, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, yeah, in that, like, he's dealing with a lot of pressures in his own life. And I guess this is how he's coping with it. So, either the opening scene, which I think does a very good job capitulating his entire emotional process that, like, permeates throughout the film, or the ending, which, like you said, is quite simply fantastic. I think it's a great scene as well.
It's quite a very depressing ending because he doesn't actually really reconnect with anyone. He sort of has these sort of hallucinations, but he doesn't actually really. Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, yeah. He imagines himself reconnecting. And it's it's a very dark ending, and I do appreciate when a film just sort of is willingly quite like I'm okay with films ending on like a downer note. I think as long as it sort of works thematically with what the film is doing, I think it works very well here, and I think it's a great that sort of final visual of just him being zipped up in a body bag. I think is a great. Yeah, final shot of the film.
Yeah. I think that's like, that does a pretty good job of just taking you from like, taking the rug underneath your feet again, you know? Just pulling it out. Like, just when you think that he's finally accepted death and You know, maybe he's decided, okay, before I leave this world, I'm gonna atone for my sins or whatever, right? Because, like, you know, previously it was the hallucination scene, so you'd think that he finally learns the errors of his own ways, and but then no, it abruptly cuts to the reality of his life, which is just that he never actually gets to make any amends, never gets to leave anything in his life that he feels, you know, particularly proud of. I mean, although it's a stand-in, really, Joe Gideon, although being successful, he doesn't really have anything to show for it. Like, you know, the musical never actually ends up going through. The film does have a critique, like, has someone, I think, has a negative review or something like that. So, you know, like, actually, he doesn't really have anything to show for it. So it's just a pathetic, sad little man seeing life and seeing all that he could do and then just taking that life away from him.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything you want to say? Like, any final thoughts you want to give on the film, or, like, is there anything else you want to touch on in regards to the film?
I don't think so. I think I've already said all that I've wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Any of your thoughts? Any final thoughts?
No, I think I've laid out my feelings quite clearly. Yeah, I think that it, yeah, is not, I don't know, and this is a film I could possibly see myself liking more on a rewatch, because it's very possible I will watch this again at some point, but for now it just, yeah, doesn't fully work, and I give it a very sturdy 7 out of 10. I think it's a good film. I think it's a very well made film. It's just, yeah, the writing, script wise, not quite there for me.
I'd give it a 9 out of 10. I think it's quite fantastic. I mean, of course, there are its own flaws, but I think the flaws make the film better. It makes it feel more genuine in a sense.
Yeah, I get that. I you know, there's films that I would rate highly that I'd like concede, like, yeah, it's flawed, but I think, yeah, if you can overlook the flaws, I think it would, yeah, I can understand why it'd be a film that, yeah, you would like, if you're able to sort of overlook the flaws, but it just doesn't quite, I just can't quite do that with this film. So thank you all for listening to this week's episode. Hagen, do you have any final things you want to say? Anything you want to plug or anything before I wrap this up?
You can read my work, or William's work, on the Midnight Critic Circle website, which I'm sure William has plugged several times before, or his guests have plugged several times before, but it's a really great circle of, you know, of critics who all like, who have interesting taste and have interesting things to say about films, I think.
No, that's fair enough. Thank you for joining me for this week, Hagen. If you want to come back again to do another episode, if there's anything you want to talk about in particular, I'm very open to having you back on.
Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, the same thing. I loved being on this podcast. It was fun to talk about a film, even if we don't necessarily have the same opinion on it. I think, you know, it's always great to talk about film.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So yeah, thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode. Go back, listen to the last two episodes I've done. Last week's one, which is the Oscars episode, it's a very long episode, but I think there's a lot of interesting discussions that were had. But yeah, go listen back to all my previous episodes. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and I'll see you all in the next one. Goodbye.